Rocky Horror Minute is rated R. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is also rated R. We're going to spend this time discussing the movie in gory detail, and along the road we will talk about some adult content and use some of our favorite swear words.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey warp.
Consider yourselves warned. Welcome to Rocky Horror Minute, the podcast where we break down the Rocky Horror Picture Show in excruciating detail, 1 minute at a time. I'm one of your hosts, Leandra.
And I'm your other host, Kelly.
And today, we're joined by a very special guest. He's a writer, he's a producer, he's a production manager of Ask, Seek, Knock, and a sketch comic working on the show Something Sketchy, our dear friend, Luke Allen.
Oh, thank you. That is the nicest intro I've ever had, and like, factually correct, which is great, because sometimes they're not, and you just got to go along with it.
And global yodeling champion, Luke Allen.
Well, that's it. Sometimes they're like really nice things. I did a radio interview where they said I was award winning. I've never won an award in my life, but I didn't say no. I was just like, sure.
How are you doing today?
I'm good, good. It's kind of, I feel like it's been a long time coming because like I keep, you happen to also message me like just at the right time because like whilst schedule is like absolutely manic at the moment and not slowing down, but for like good reasons. Over the course of a week, I'd said to two different people, I've really missed doing minute-by-minute guest spots. And then I got the message and I was like, I've just got to say yes and make this work. Because, yeah, it's, yeah, there's just something so lovely about it. But it's been, yeah, it's been maybe the best bit of a year since I've, like, recorded anything. And it's kind of, it was almost daunting tonight. I was like, about an hour ago, I was like, how do I do this thing again?
But, aww.
Yeah, we'll find
and
out.
It's been a while, but Leandra and I have both been on different projects of yours years ago. So
yes.
Nice to finally return the favor and have you on our show.
2020.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Which is, what a year. But that show, not to like tie it into a really sort of forced self-promo, but I know, I think at least Kelly, you were on, I can't remember, Leandra, if you were or not, on the finale of the Christmas Actually show where we just like just threw everyone in. One of the guests we had on, Gareth, is actually the writer and director of the TV pilot I'm production managing at the moment.
Yeah.
And that was one of my first conversations with him was the Love Actually podcast.
That's
so
good.
So
fun.
It's like we've got that sort of like kept in a thing. But yeah, we worked together in 2021. He pitched this little like web series idea to me, and then it sort of grew bigger than we expected. There's like National Treasures doing their first acting role in 50 years, and like it's and 15 Doctor Who actors in
Wow.
I think we've had former classic Doctor Who companions now phoning me up asking if they can be extras because their friends are in it and they just want to sit in the background for 5 days. And so it's like it's become this very weird, exciting, fun thing. So yeah, that's called Henry House, if anyone wants to research that. And then I will now, like, shut up on promo.
You know, maybe Luke's the person that I should ask about that episode that confused me. I'll do that later.
Yeah, that'll be what we ask for the next minute. But for this one, can you tell us a bit about your connection to the movie Rocky Horror Picture Show, of course, and if you remember the first time you saw the film?
Yeah, I was trying to sort of look back on it all because I think I must have been about 12 when I first saw it. And I think I picked it up in a charity shop, or was it thrift store? Is that the American thing? You know, a shop with secondhand, and it was like 50p, and I'd heard a lot about it. And I watched it, and I have to say, I was really taken in by like the first half. And then it kind of lost my focus, and I don't know if I ever actually finished it. But I loved all the music from it, and I had like an album of it, and I'd check in and out. But over the years, it always felt like pop culture that like I was aware of and knew, but was like just outside of the like cult following of it. Like there was a lot of like crossover between other fandoms or other communities I'm in, but I'd never quite aligned with Rocky Horror. And yeah, watching it this week was probably the first time since then when I was 12 that I've actually seen it. Which, for reference, I'm 20, so like it was, what, 8 years.
For but, reference, I'm yeah, still it's 12.
So. Literally last month.
It's also, I should just say, it's the first time I've said the phrase, I'm 20. I'm actually like a month away from it. Well, a month away from the day, but I'm like, I'll just say
Aww.
It.
Oh, wow. I appreciate your candor. I really wouldn't want to...
Age it forward.
I wouldn't want people to put that in the, like, what do they call it on IMDb? The, like, goofs section of our podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, my age is actually wrong. Yeah, no, I don't know. I just thought I'd say it. It sounded cool. There's like an unspoken gap between 19 and 20, I feel, that no one ever really talked.
Oh, for sure. It's the end of your teen years. It's not that we're going to be going too ham, but it's kind of when we initially made plans for you to come on the podcast, like years ago, you were still a minor, and we were like, well, we got to be a little careful about it because sometimes this movie.
Yeah, no, it's sort of bizarre, and I'm lucky enough as well that I kind of look a few years older than I am, and so I've really loved recently. It's just this beard. Like if I get rid of the beard, then like I still look 12. But yeah. So yeah, that was sort of it for me with Rocky Horror. I've always liked it. I've always appreciated it. I've had people try and convince me at some point to go to one of the screenings, and I keep toing and froing on it. I'm kind of like I don't know. I love like The Room on stage. You know, that's the closest thing I can say I've done is that like sort of live experience.
You might be one of the only people who has seen The Room like in a live screening sort of situation, but not Rocky. I think that's very interesting.
Yes. Mm. Oh, that is. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was gonna say, is it because I'm a very like filmy person, but like. Same with Rocky. Like I'm aware of it, and yeah, I've never been like opposed to it. There's a friend of mine who asked me the other day, like she was saying, like she's thinking of doing Rocky Horror. Would I do it with her? And like, she's probably the only friend that could actually convince me. And if there was like an exact date and time, she might have pulled me over the line. But I'm kind of like, yeah, it's like I read about it. I'm like, that sounds fun, but not for me. So we'll see.
I definitely think you should give it a shot. I think you will totally have so much fun if you go, and it's not that bad in terms of if you're worried about how rowdy it'll be. It's pretty user friendly for beginners. I think.
I think so.
That's fair. And I'm still sort of A, what it entails, but B, like I'm always. Feel like, and even though it's within the context of viewing a film, I'm always like wholesome Christian values look out. Aww. And I'm like, am I representing that by doing Rocky? But I mean, I'm aware it's a very different thing, but that is always like, I'm always like trying to view myself through that lens of like, how does that equate with that? What example am I setting? But I don't know, like it's that's yeah, I've heard lots of fun things, and yeah, I'm not opposed, but I would, and maybe to be honest, even this time around, there were certain points of the film which I loved, and there were other points where to be honest, it's been a really manic week, so it could just be that, but my attention just like dragged at points where I was like, oh, you've lost.
Oh no, that's not minutes. You. That's the movie for sure.
Yeah, that's a feature.
And yeah, maybe I'd need the live screening to kind of bring some life back into
it. It's a completely different experience. And as somebody who is so interested and involved in film, I think you would really get something out of it. There's no other experience you can have where the audience is so engaged. So something to think about from an academic point of view, but nobody's gonna strip you naked and paddle you or anything like that. It's not too bad.
Yeah, well, I will definitely do like more reading into it and see if my friend brings it up again.
All right,
Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're going to talk about minute 74 this time.
That is correct.
Just for fun, can you tell me what happens in that minute?
Well, okay. So we left off with Columbia starting what is to be a dramatic monologue. She continues to, she sort of crosses down that ramp to stand in front of Frank while she's saying this. And she says, "First you spurn me for Eddie. Then you throw him off like an old overcoat for Rocky. You chew people up and then you spit them out again. I loved you. Do you hear me? I loved you. And what did it get me? Yeah, I'll tell you, a big nothing. You're like a sponge. You take, and drain others of their love and emotion. Yeah, well, I've had enough. At this point, she pulls her shirt down to conspicuously reveal her nipple through a hole in her shirt, and then continues, you've got to choose between me and Rocky, so named because of the rocks in his head, and puts her hands on her hips. Frank looks somewhat surprised and uncomfortable at all of this. Then he turns to Magenta, gives her a nod, and she delightedly pulls the switch down and Medusa's Columbia. Then Frank stares right down the barrel of the camera and says, it's not easy having a good time. He glances up at Rocky, who is posed like a bodybuilder with his arms up, you know, flexing for some reason. Frank gives just a little bit of a nod. We don't see Magenta, but we get a really fun on-screen slide that says Medusa. So we know the Medusa ray has gone off, and then Rocky is, of course, a statue as well. Then Frank looks right back down the camera and says, even smiling makes my face ache. He bites his finger dramatically, slowly walks over to the wall, says, and my children turn on me, and putting both palms against the wall. And that's the end of the minute.
Even with you describing it bit by bit, I'm still not sure I got to grips with what was going on. But we'll, now, I was watching Rocky Horror back to back with in the background while I was working. I'd been binging through the Mighty Boosh. I don't know if that's present much overseas, but I realized like it was too much surreal for me for one day. I was just like, you know, I was sort of one step away from just like sitting down for a night of like Louis Buñuel or something after that. But it was like, yeah, but I've enjoyed it, and it's a fun minute, and I think it's a clear example of if I can go into one sort of vague point, which was especially in the scene, I think the overacting of Rocky Horror is like really fascinating. Because I think overacting is so often said as a criticism, but it's just a style of performance. I mean, like, Nick Cage has made a whole career out of it, and like, it works. But it's the same reason why sometimes you watch him in a film where, you know, if you watch Nick Cage in a drama in which he's the only one who's overacting, it's off-putting, but within a greater sort of camp context, it's great. Yeah, her performance here especially just reminded me of Showgirls in terms of, like, overacting. And I think it's a very big part, that sort of performance style, within cult films. And, yeah, that was pretty much my main note for this episode, was the overacting.
It is a really fun moment of melodrama, and it also brings a kind of a surprising amount of exposition. We get a lot of exposition in the following minute as well through, but, you know, because it is fun to have Columbia's kind of having like her roses turn moment, and I think it's really fun. But then also, like, we learn that this is really the first point in the film, I think, that we have any inkling that she was initially having an affair with Frank, and then Frank left her for Eddie, and then, you know, spurned Eddie for Rocky. But, you know, I thought that was interesting, and what a way to deliver it. And they do kind of just gloss over it. It's really easy for first time viewers to miss that detail. But yeah, nothing like delivering information by just saying it to the audience.
I also think that her very kind of silly voice that she's using really makes it harder to focus on the words that she's saying. Little Mel Campbell is Australian, and this is her putting on some sort of not Australian kind of othered accent. I guess maybe it's supposed to be kind of like almost New York coded.
I think she was going for New York, yeah.
Yeah. But it swings and misses. I would say that she's better at accents than perhaps you, Kelly.
Hey. Well, you know, actually in the commentary, the Richard O'Brien, Patricia Quinn commentary for this minute, Patricia was talking about how much she had to practice running through this these lines with Little Nell, which makes sense. It's a pretty long monologue. And she said in the cold caravan, which is, you know, cute to imagine them in their trailer running lines. But anyway, she did a pretty funny Little Nell impression. You know, like trying to do an impression of that voice.
That's pretty great.
What voice it was. And then Richard O'Brien was like, you know, I wonder if she knew it was going to show her nipple. And Patricia started going, oh, she knew. She knew. She knew. She's a flasher, that girl.
She is. So, I've met her at conventions, and at one convention in particular, she absolutely, like, kind of revealed maybe not all of her boob, but a fair amount of her bosom to the audience because people were cheering her on, and that's what you do when the audience says, show me your boobs.
It is so relatable to me. But yeah, exactly. I mean, there are not one, not two, but three moments in this film where she supposedly accidentally shows her nipples. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that it's accidental. But yeah.
And I think sort of goes without saying now that, like, that you wouldn't be able to have that without some sort of contractual conversation afterwards about, like, acknowledgement that it happened. I remember there was a film that came out in 2003, I want to say, here, called Confetti, where Olivia Colman and Robert Webb played nudists as side characters and were told that all the nudity would be blurred, and then they were sat in the cinema when they found out that it wasn't.
Oh, that's awful.
And yeah, that's there have been legal cases, like, they've been thrown against that film for a long, long time. But even, you know, between 2003 and now, like, that just wouldn't happen. There's too many things to prevent that, which I think is important.
Yeah, and I'm sure she would gladly acquiesce. But it's funny. I mean, it is so obvious that she's intentionally pulling that hole down so her nipple pops out.
Yes, it feels if it wasn't her own call, it feels like she's responding to specific, like, direction and process. Like, I've seen it so often in actors and actresses that, like, audition, and especially in self-tape form, like, sometimes you can see in a performance that they are actively thinking about each thing they do, and that move properly feels like that. It feels like her next note is reveal nipple through shirt, and, like, it doesn't it doesn't feel natural and accidental at all.
Yeah, her gestures and generally the way she delivers this monologue feels very much like a stage performance to me, which makes sense. You know, she was in the stage version of this show before it became a movie, but this whole monologue in particular feels very theater to me. I don't know if you'd agree, Leandra.
Oh, for sure. But it's really weird because in the stage production, the original version, they not only didn't freeze anyone, they just sprayed them with psychedelics, but they also didn't have this monologue from Columbia. This was created for the film. And then later, they've redone the Rocky Horror Show a couple of times to make little tweaks to make it closer to the film, because that's what people want. But in the original script, it's Magenta keeps singing "You're a hot dog" until somebody sprays her. And then
that is totally in character for Magenta.
Yeah. Frank says, "Magenta, relax," and then Riff Raff sprays her. And then he goes on and says, "Columbia, the artists are in a molecular state somewhere between entrance and exit." And then Riff Raff sprays Columbia and says, "When they've pulled themselves together, see that they are prepared for the floor show." And Columbia says, "Oh, wow, I can dig it. Much. Far out. What a gas. That's groovy. I'm hip, man. It's like a trip. Oh, nice one. Freak out, baby. Dig you later." And I have seen this on stage because I've seen the Rocky Horror Show several times, and what they do now is they have this monologue and then Riff Raff sprays her in the face with psychedelics and then she does the far out man that's groovy, whatever. And one of the last times that I saw it live, at the end of the monologue, Columbia dabbed, like, so named because the rocks in his head, dab. And I was like, oh, that's proof that that's overdone.
Oh my god. I will say, well, first of all, that's what they were referencing. Remember a minute or two ago, I was discussing how Richard O'Brien referenced that. He said, oh, that's what that between entrance and exit reference was. And I said, what? I don't know what that was referring to. So it must have been that line from the show.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, speaking of the so named because of the rocks in his head, that was such a, like, such a kind of uncalled for burn on Rocky. What did he do?
Well, he's okay. He's overhyped.
Well, it's just like, if I'm Rocky up there, I'm like, damn. What did I have to do with any of this? So I think it's funny, and the way she delivers it, it's such a, like, schoolyard, you know, taunt.
And the fact that Frank hears this and doesn't even say anything, he just has Magenta turn her to stone, I think that is one of the funniest moments in this. It's very similar to the Janet starts singing "You're a Hot Dog" and they just cut her off and turn her to stone.
Yeah, so it is funny, like, imagine somebody just coming and giving you this whole thing and you're just like, okay, well, I'll just move on from that, you know.
But those are all of my notes.
Well, yeah, I mean, Patricia Quinn also shouted out her friend, and I just thought this was interesting, shouted out her friend Dr. Estella Weldon, who apparently has written several books on female flashers, and specifically mentioned a book called Mother Madonna Whore, which I looked up. That is from 1988. I believe it's still in print, and it's quite highly rated, so she must be, you know, a pretty well-regarded psychologist. But yeah, it's all about, like, deviant sexual behavior in women.
Oh, that's crazy.
But yeah, little Nell, a flasher after my own heart. You know, one time there were notices all over my apartment complex that there was a flasher going around, and I texted my mom, oh, there's a flasher at Pinnacle, and she texted back, ew, was her name Kelly? And I was like, fuck off, Mom!
You still need to give me your mom's contact information so that I can invite her to your roast.
She would be the best at it. But yeah, those are all my notes besides that.
Do we think someone, like, are those statues, like, in a museum somewhere? Does someone, like, are they in, like, a back office? Does someone
own
them?
Interestingly enough, some of them have been found. They were just languishing on a back lot. Others were destroyed. Nobody really put any thought into what to do with these after they were done being used. So, like,
yeah, makes sense.
Janet one survived, and I think that's it.
I cannot believe that the actors didn't demand to have them. I mean, wouldn't you?
I mean, like, yes.
I feel like it's less weird to own it yourself than to know that someone else has a nude statue of you.
That is true.
Like, I feel like if I for some reason had one, like, yeah, I'd rather know that it's, like, in a cupboard somewhere than that someone's just, like, got that as their
cupboard.
Like,
my
decor.
Ass, that is my front and center in my decor. I'm using it. I'm hanging shit on it. I'm putting, like, wreaths on it for Christmas. I would love to have that. But yeah, did you have any other notes, Luke, for this one?
I had one really vague point, which I totally forgot to bring up, which was right at the start when just talking about Rocky Horror in general. But to be honest, I've got less notes for the next minute, mm-hmm. so I could just always save it for
then. Makes total sense.
Okay. Well, the next bit that we go over is callbacks. and audience participation in general. And I know that you haven't been to a live show, so my guess is you don't have any idea of what people might say during this minute.
Yeah, no, it's strange. I was trying to think this. It's like, I actually, yeah, I thought I had knowledge of it, of like vaguely what goes on and the sort of things that are said. And then once I was prepared, like watching the film, I was like, actually, I have zero idea of any points that anyone does anything. So yeah, I am intrigued.
Okay. Well, I apologize in advance. This is where it tends to get a little raunchier, but so the first one that I have is when she says, "What did it get me?" Yeah, I'll tell you, a big nothing. At least it was a big nothing. It's fair. When she does the little nipple reveal, it is very important to yell peek-a-boob. And then there's a long, awkward silence after she finishes her monologue, and so it's very fun during that time to chant, "Holy shit, what a bitch, quick magenta, throw the switch." Or there's several, you know, you can say, "Oh my god, what a bitch, magenta, throw the fucking switch." There's many ways you can say it, but it all amounts to the same thing. The timing is perfect for, you know, then she does it. When the statue appears of Columbia, we didn't really go over this, but Columbia's naked statue visibly has a larger left breast. And so the callback for that is, now that's what I call a BLT, a bigger left tit. And then, as a response, sometimes people will say, "Well, now we know which side Eddie slept on." And then as a response to that, sometimes, especially Leandra, will sometimes say, "Both sides, he was a big guy." So, fun. And then the last one I have is right before he says, "Even smiling makes my face ache," you can say, "How do you feel after blowing the whole cast?" That's what I got. Leandra? Yeah.
I have lots, actually. During Columbia's monologue, you can kind of say after, like, "Spurn, overcoat." And then when Columbia says, "You chew people up and then you spit them out again," you say, "Doesn't anybody swallow in this film?" And then she says, "I love you," and you go, "What?" And then she says, "Do you hear me? I love you." And you go, "Okay." Like the song.
Jesus Christ.
I.
Oh, man. That one dates us, but that's
fun. It is very fun for me. This is more of a note as somebody who's played the role. She kind of flips her hands flippantly, and it's left, right, left. And while I'm doing the monologue, I kind of have to hold back, yelling left, right, left at that point. And when she says, "Drain others of their love and emotion," you can say, "Drain others of their cum and erections." And then after every time that somebody turns into a statue, you can go, "Everybody must get stoned," which is of course a reference to the Bob Dylan song "Rainy Day Women number 12 and 35 and when you see Rocky and he's just posing, you go, "Who stands like that?" Or "Fucking poser."
That's good.
And when you see Frankenfurter, he says, "Even smiling makes my face ache." Before that, he says, "It's not easy having a good time." And you go, "Try Disneyland, you sick fuck." There's another musical reference here. When he walks over to the red door, you go, "I see a red door and I want to paint it black." Frank says, "My children turn on me." And you say, "No, your children turn you on."
That's actually really good.
Yeah, that's all that I have.
Okay. Yeah, lots of callbacks in this minute, because what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, that's all I've got. And if that's the case, I guess that it's time to sign off for this little minute.
And Luke, do you know how we normally do that?
I unfortunately not.
Well,
sorry.
No worries at all.
You will for the next time. We're going to all speak at the same time.
In perfect unison.
In perfect unison. Yeah. And it's now. You don't have to go home.
Go home.
But you can't stay here. So get the fuck out.
To the late night double feature picture show.